Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, February 14th, 2021. It is Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's Day to anyone out there celebrating, or if you're like me and you're lonely and single, I hope you have a good day. I'm going to be spending the day with my family. It's actually my stepmother's birthday, actually earlier this week, so happy late birthday to my stepmother here on the Weekender, and I'll be spending some time with my family this afternoon, and then coming back to my place, hanging with some buddies, and watching NXT TakeOver Vengeance Day. So I'm looking forward to tonight, and I hope everyone had a great day and a great Valentine's Day, like I just mentioned. So we're going to talk about the topics for today's episode, then we'll jump right into it. The topics for this week's Weekender podcast are Impact's No Surrender. We have results for that. We're going to talk a lot about that today. That happened last night. We have MLW Fusion results. GCW Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 4 results. That happened last night as well. We have 205 Live results, NXT UK results, Ring of Honor results. We got a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Set for Life. And right at the end of the show, I'm going to give you some quick NXT TakeOver Vengeance Day predictions. But before we get into all that stuff, as always, I have my recommended show to watch on IWTV. And this week, it is New South Pro Wrestling's We Love Pro Wrestling 2021. So the company is called New South Pro Wrestling. That's N-E-W-S-O-U-T-H, Pro Wrestling. And the show is called We Love Pro Wrestling 2021. I believe I chose New South last week for their Action Clash for my recommended show. New South's been doing great stuff. And I want to give a shout out right now before I forget to Action Wrestling. They ran some shows out of Tyrone, Georgia on, I believe it was Friday night. And they did a doubleheader, back-to-back shows that were both absolutely incredible. A lot of awesome stuff. I'm going to wait until those shows are available on demand on independentwrestling.tv. Like, they were live on Friday, but they haven't been uploaded yet to the website. But once those are uploaded, as long as they're uploaded before next weekend, they'll definitely be my shows to watch for next week. And I'll highlight those a little bit more. And I don't want to talk about that show today, because I don't want to give out any spoilers in case y'all want to watch it fresh after I recommend it next week, if that all makes sense. So, looking forward to talking about Action Wrestling next weekend. But today, once again, recommended show is New South Pro Wrestling's We Love Pro Wrestling 2021. It took place on February 6th of this year, so just last week. It happened in Hanceville, Alabama, and these are the matches, to check out on this show. We have Nate Brock taking on Hunter Drake. We had The Body Shop, the team of Johnny Pipes, Jason Jennings, and Thunder Thighs, taking on the Lady Killers, the team of Daniel Perez and Rodney Rockchild. We had I Am Sam versus Cabana Mandan, Brett Eisen versus The Mongrel, Adam Priest versus Rhino. You heard me right, that Rhino. We had the New South Heavyweight Championship on the line, champion Derek Neal defending against Tyler Franks. And in the main event, we have an unsanctioned match, Kevin Ryan taking on Sean Christopher. A lot of great stuff here from top to bottom. I'll highlight some things right here for you. Hunter Drake taking on Nate Brock in the opener. Hunter Drake, of course, is the tag team partner of Tyler Franks. They are known as the Talladega Knights. Tyler Franks had a world title match on the show that I'll talk about here in just a second. But good to see Hunter Drake in the mix there, and that whole story is very interesting with Drake and Franks being a tag team. Franks won basically the New South Royal Rumble to earn a shot at Derek Neal, and it was while Hunter Drake was out. I believe he was injured at the time, but he was off TV, came back basically to come celebrate with Tyler Franks. So it's an interesting dynamic because, you know, they're still friends, and they're still partners, and, you know, it's just interesting going into this show with that dynamic. Like, Hunter Drake, still very much in the mix, still very over with the fans. Franks and Hunter Drake, that tag team, are super over with New South. And then, of course, like I said, I might as well talk about it now, but we had Tyler Franks taking on Derek Neal. Derek Neal's been a great champion for New South. He won the title from, let me see if I remember how this worked out. It was Cabana Mandan for like forever, like at least a year, maybe 2 years. I mean, Cabana Mandan was the champion for a long, long time. And then he lost the belt to Derek Neal. Derek Neal lost that belt to Donny Janella and then won it back shortly after from Donny. So Derek Neal is, I believe, technically in his second title reign, and he's done a really great job. Really believable guy. He's got size, power, skill, does a little bit of everything. Really, really like Derek Neal. And I really like Tyler Franks. He's just this white meat babyface who the fans just absolutely love. He got a huge reaction when he won the, like I said, it's like their Royal Rumble. I just can't remember what they call it. The New South Rumble or whatever they call it. But he got a huge reaction when he won that match. They call him All Beef Tyler Franks, just in case you didn't know that. And yeah, I really think you should check that out. For, at the very least, if you're not familiar with Derek Neal, because he has been doing great work as the New South champion. And then Tyler Franks, because he's this young up-and-coming guy who has really, like I said, I can't really stress enough how surprised I was when I started really getting into New South, how over Tyler Franks and Hunter Drake were with the crowd. So really cool stuff there. I Am Sam took on Cabana Man Dan, as I mentioned a minute ago. Cabana Man Dan is just doing amazing work all over the place. He is having the best run of his career, I think, right now, as far as the level of confidence he has. I heard my buddy John Mosley, a.k.a. Mose, a.k.a. Jumpin' Johnny Mosley, who actually does the commentary for New South and Action Wrestling and Southern Underground Pro and does a whole bunch of stuff with TWE and all over the place at this point. So shout out to Mose and the whole KOBK crew. But, you know, Mose and Jaden Newman, who is a super talented wrestler that I've talked about a lot on this show, still a young guy who actually trains people and runs TWE at the age of, like, I'm assuming he's probably like 21, 22 years old, something like that. So absolutely incredible what he's been able to accomplish in a very short time. But Jaden Newman and Mose did a podcast recently, and they talked about how Cabana Man Dan is really putting it all together right now, and how his confidence has never been higher, and his look, and his dedication to wrestling, and a little bit more about his career. And I think that y'all should really check that out. I would highly recommend checking out that podcast. Jaden Newman recorded it, so just find Jaden Newman, and I think the show is called How Do You Take Your Wrestling? So, yeah, listen to that episode, and they really talk about Cabana Man Dan. They talk about a whole lot of great stuff, and give you some real insight into the world of indie wrestling. A fantastic show. But they talk a good bit about Cabana Man Dan, and I just kind of wanted to give them that shout-out because I echo exactly what they were saying about him on that show. And I really like what Cabana Man Dan's doing right now, and he's doing great stuff over at Action Wrestling. He's one of the main faces of SUP, Southern Underground Pro in Nashville. So Cabana Man Dan, I'm a huge fan of, and his bout here with I Am Sam was great. We had Brett Eisen, another guy who, you know, I sound like a broken record for those of you who listen every week, but Brett Eisen is, you know, he's a Nashville guy. He is a part of that KOBK crew along with Mose, who I was just talking about. And, you know, KOBK, just so you know, I'll give them a little bit of love here on the show because they're really doing a great job of finally, like, branding KOBK as a stable. Like, there were guys who before, like, if you knew them, you knew that they were all tight. But now it's really getting branded as KOBK, which stands for Killer Be Killed. And you got Brett Eisen, Mose, Hardway Heater, Akira, Nolan Edward, who is just out there killing it right now. Nolan Edward is all over the place. Had a match with Anthony Henry at Action Wrestling that was phenomenal that I can't wait to talk about when it's, you know, available on the IWTV service. They also have, who am I missing? Lutha X. I hope I didn't miss anyone there, but that's the KOBK crew. And Brett Eisen, for all intents and purposes, I kind of view him as kind of the leader of the group, but they're all equals. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, Brett Eisen's who I associate most with that brand, but nobody seems to act above anyone else within their group, if that makes sense. And I think it's a great dynamic, and it's a great thing for all those guys to be involved in. You also had Adam Priest. Oh, and by the way, his match with the Mongrel was awesome. The Mongrels, I mean, this is just a hoss fight, which is, you know, right up both their alleys. We had Adam Priest versus Rhino. I've been talking about Adam Priest a lot on this show. He's been doing stuff on AEW Dark. His gimmick is kind of at this point, because he wrestles kind of all over. I see him in Action Wrestling often as well. And he's kind of one of these guys who, as a heel, basically he just like leans into the fact that he's short. Basically, like he's this incredible technical wrestler, but he's just very small. He's not like Marco Stunt small, but it's hard to explain. And like the fans are constantly ragging on him for his height because like the talent is all there, but then like the height, and it, you can see that it gets to him like as like a character on the show. And then you have Rhino on the other side, who is just a bona fide legend, right? I mean, I could sit here and do an entire podcast about just Rhino and talk for the next 2 or 3 hours. But of course, I've been watching him since ECW. I'll never forget him being the last ever ECW champion, you know, before WWE eventually revived the brand and all that stuff. But as far as I'm concerned, the last real ECW champion ever was Rhino. And, you know, all the stuff he's done throughout his career, and now, you know, still working with Impact Wrestling and out the wrestling for New South, which I just think is awesome. He's made multiple appearances for New South at this point. He's become kind of a regular on the show, and him versus Adam Priest is really cool that you know, was able to go down. And then the main event, which was just really cool as well, because there's a lot of history between Kevin Ryan and Sean Christopher. They were both a part of the group's name is escaping me at the moment for some reason, but it was the two of them and Chris Kronk. And excuse me, and they're you know, there's been a long-term storyline that's played out where Ryan and Christopher are at odds with each other, and this unsanctioned match is meant to settle that score. And I'm a fan of both guys. I'd say I'm a bit more of a fan of Kevin Ryan personally, not on like a personal level or anything like that, but just like as a fan, when I watch the shows, Kevin Ryan just comes off a little bit more like a potential star to me than Sean Christopher does. But they're both very good, and they're both very good. They were both very good partners, and they're both very good opponents as well. And I feel like their careers are going to be very closely linked for the entirety of their career. Probably it's going to be kind of like just in my opinion, but I think it's going to, you know, eventually we'll look back, because these guys are both, they're both young, but they've, you know, Kevin Ryan specifically has been wrestling for like over a decade, and he's doing a lot of cool stuff now with Shug D, where Shug D has taken him under his wing over in Action Wrestling. And yeah, I guess my point is, I think that Sean Christopher and Kevin Ryan are going to be similar to a degree to someone like, to people like, you know, El Generico and Kevin Steen, or like Warhorse and Gary J. If that, you know, for those of you who keep up with, you know, the indie side of things, you know, maybe not to those degrees. I mean, they both have a long way to, you know, to fill the shoes that I just mentioned. But my real point is, I think that, you know, 5 years from now, we're still talking about something that has to do with Kevin Ryan versus Sean Christopher, or Kevin Ryan teaming with Sean Christopher. I just have this feeling their careers are going to be intertwined for a very long time. And yeah, so I, once again, really highly recommend y'all check this show out. It was great from top to bottom. You're going to get to see a lot of the talent that I talk about often on this show. And there's also some new talent sprinkled in, like, I hadn't even got into, you know, Nate Brock or the tag team match and stuff. So check this show out. Once again, it's New South Pro Wrestling's We Love Pro Wrestling 2021, and it's available right now on independentwrestling.tv. Moving on, we got No Surrender results. So this show happened last night. I thought it was really well done. I really enjoyed it. There's a few things here that are kind of hits and misses, but honestly, I think from top to bottom, it was mostly hits. I thought it was a good show. Started off with Decay defeating Tennille Dashwood and Team Triple XL. The finish came when Taurus pinned Larry, and it was after Rosemary hits the mist on AC, and then Taurus pinned Larry. Or sorry, Taurus. I gotta get that name right. I call him Taurus all the time. Taurus. It's kind of like, for a while, I had the hardest time calling Roosh. I would always say Rush instead of Roosh, and I knew it was Roosh, but every time I'd read that name, it always threw me off, and I'd just say it wrong. But Black Taurus, and he's a great addition to the Decay stable. It really legitimizes them, I think. You know, Crazy Steve is solid. You know, I just don't like the name Crazy Steve, because I think it just sounds kind of lame. I've talked about that before, but massive props to him for, you know, carving out the career he has And I've seen him live in Nashville and in person and stuff. And, you know, he consistently gets work, you know, inside and outside of Impact Wrestling. And he's been with Impact for, you know, the better part of a decade now at this point. So massive props to him. And yeah, like I said, in my predictions, I did choose Decay to win this match, and I was correct there. After that, we had Myers and Hernandez defeating Cardona and Eddie Edwards. I was incorrect in my prediction here. I actually thought that Cardona and Edwards would get the win. The finish came where, so early on in the match, Hernandez removed one of the turnbuckle pads, exposing the metal. And at the end of the match, basically, like, I believe, if I remember correctly, Cardona looked like he was going to be going for the Rough Rider. Myers, like, launches him face first into the exposed turnbuckle, and then Myers hits that running lariat and then got the 1-2-3. So it was by, you know, underhanded means that that Myers and Hernandez get the win. Which makes sense, which I'm fine with. Personally speaking, I'd like to see Myers get pushed more than everyone else in this match. And it's nothing against Edwards, Cardona, or Hernandez, but I like Myers on his own. I like him getting a real opportunity to do something different. You know, I think he's going to be linked to Matt Cardona, similar to the guys I just talked about. He'll be linked to Matt Cardona his entire life. But every now and then, it's nice to see them do their own things. And I think they're going to keep feuding because obviously, Myers getting the dirty win here is going to lead to something more down the line. I think that Hernandez is going to stick around as Myers, you know, heater, you know, bodyguard. But I don't know if Cardona and Edwards like continue a allegiance, but I feel like Hernandez and Myers is something that is going to stick around. And once again, I want to see Myers doing something different, and I really like seeing him get this win. After this, we had another match where I was really happy to see this guy get this win. We had Jake Something defeating Diener. This was a great match. It really did a great job establishing Jake Something as a legitimate force on his own. Diener, I think, has been doing great work with Violent by Design. I think that whole group has been doing great work. I love Eric Young as the leader. I love the vignettes and the explanations of why he is the way he is and what he's trying to accomplish with this group. I love Joe Doering and the fact that that guy never takes bumps. Like, if you pay attention, I don't know if he's fallen over once since debuting in Impact Wrestling. Like, I could be wrong, but even last night, I remember specifically Jake Something hit this awesome dive over the top rope to the floor right at the end of the match, and it knocked over Eric Young, and it just pushed back Joe Doering, like, a little bit farther up the entrance ramp. And that was right before Jake Something came in and hit the Black Hole Slam for the three on Diener. So it was a great match. It was a great ending sequence where, you know, Jake Something takes out the rest of the group to free him up to hit his finisher and pin Diener, which was all really well done. But on top of it, that little extra attention to detail that I picked up on with Joe Doering not being knocked over during that. I mean, they are doing an awesome job, in my opinion, of making Joe Doering seem like he's going to be something special in Impact. I really feel it. You know, I think that I think eventually we'll probably get, you know, I don't really know how this story plays out for sure, but I think probably the most interesting part about the story about Jake Something versus Violent by Design is going to be Jake Something versus Joe Doering. You know, the end game might eventually be Jake Something versus Eric Young. I'm not sure, but the most interested I'm in any of the matches that I think are happening in the near future between these, you know, between Jake Something and this group, I think Jake Something versus Joe Doering is just going to be amazing when it happens. I really, really like the presentation of Joe Doering on Impact Wrestling TV, and I really like the presentation of Jake Something. I love that he's finally using that name, and they explained why he uses that name, and or he explained why he uses that name even better. And yeah, Diener is doing great work. I like everything about all of this, and I like all the talent involved. This is all two thumbs up for me. After the match, Violent by Design wound up putting Jake Something through a table. They did a it's like a triple power bomb, but they put him up on Joe Doering's shoulders on the second rope, and He powerbombed him off through a table. After that, we had a match which I really, really enjoyed. I love the concept of this match. I want to see more of these. I really like this all the way around. We had Josh Alexander, which was a big surprise for me. You know, I had picked Trey Miguel to win this thing. We had Josh Alexander defeating Ace Austin, Trey Miguel, Willie Mack, Daivari, and Blake Christian to get a number one contender shot at the... Well, he became the number one contender, I should say, to the X Division Championship. And I'll talk about who the X Division Champion is because they had a match for that a little bit later on in the show. But I like this a lot. The only downside to this match at all is I feel like they didn't highlight Willie Mack enough. He wasn't in for very long, and I feel like he's really getting lost in the mix, which, you know, I don't like that because I think he can just be... He has so much to offer Impact Wrestling as, like, one of their main stars, and for whatever reason, it just feels like they're really hesitant or they stop-start him a lot. But Trey Miguel looked great in this one. Ace Austin always looks great. Blake Christian... you know, the news recently coming out, it's all over the place at this point, so I'll just go ahead and officially say it. Blake Christian is signed with World Wrestling Entertainment. If you've been listening to this show, you know, week after week, I've been dropping hints like crazy about this. I've known about him being courted by WWE for probably about 3 months now, maybe longer. I was told quite a while ago that that was what was happening. And there's been other names. There are more names heading there. And if, once again, if you're paying attention to this show, you know, I don't like to, I never, it's one of these things where I'm always hesitant to break any news that I know because I don't want to be wrong because I'm getting the news from a source. But the source that I have is very, very close to these people. So it's one of these things where it's like, he's telling me stuff in confidence, and I don't want to ruin my relationship with him, and you know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things where I get a lot of this info months before it gets reported, and Blake Christian was someone that I had to bite my tongue for so long about it, because from what I heard, this was all in the works even back, you know, months back when Dez, Wentz, and Alex Zane, when they all signed with WWE, I was told at that time, Blake Christian was heading there, and that was a while ago. Once again, there's other names too that have not been announced that we talk about on this show all the time. You know, I'll just throw this out there, you know, and this is public because he did his whole goodbye speech, but Anthony Henry just had his last indie match against Nolan Edward at Action Wrestling this past Wednesday. I'm hearing a lot of things about people being interested in him, and he's got a tag team partner that's just as good as he is named JD Drake. And I'm hearing a lot of stuff about potentially people being interested in him. And there's more names on top of that. So just, you know, keep listening to The Weekender because this is the place to be. You know, not to pat myself on the back, but this is the place to be if you want to know about these people before they get signed. Because we've been talking about Blake Christian for like 2 years straight on this show. And here you go. He is the next, you know, big signing to the WWE. And a guy that I don't talk about often enough that I wish I would have. And he just happens to... I just miss him a lot because, like, a lot of the time he just happens to be wrestling on shows that I'm not highlighting here. But shout out to Christian Casanova for getting signed by the WWE as well. That guy is ultra talented, and he was another guy where I felt like it was just a matter of time. And, you know, just kind of ironic, Blake Christian and Christian Casanova, the announcements of both of them getting signed this week. But Blake Christian was a part of this match, and given the fact that, and y'all can even go back, listen, I believe it was last week on The Weekender, when I was giving the predictions for this show, I had to have said it five times, where I was like, I don't think Blake Christian's going to be an Impact for very long, so I don't see him winning this match, because I don't think he's going to be there for very long. Wink, wink, I think he might be going somewhere else. So, anyways, he was really good in this match. I mean, everyone was. Daivari is having the best run of his career right now. I mean, everyone looked good in this one. And Josh Alexander getting the win, I was surprised by because of his style is much different than what you normally see in the X Division. But because of that, that's why they went with him. And that's what they're highlighting about him, is that he is something different than what you would normally see in the X Division, which I like. I think it's great. And Josh Alexander is a fantastic performer. He's a great wrestler with a great look that presents something different, that's a legitimate badass. Like, he checks, for me, he checks every box for a professional wrestler. I'm a huge fan of his. So seeing him get pushed in any division, whether it's the X division or the world title mix, I'm all for it. They just got to figure out what to do right now with the amount of massive amounts of talent they have with the rest of this match. The people that are going to be there, you know, Blake Christian's not going to be there, but you're going to have Daivari, you're going to have Willie Mack, you're going to have, in particular, you know, Willie Mack, Trey Miguel, and Ace Austin. Like those three guys right there could be main players in your world title mix. So there's a, and then of course you have Chris Bay. I forgot to mention Chris Bay. He was in this match as well. And Chris Bay is as good as anyone I've just talked about. I think that he could be the world champion, and he's super talented. He just wasn't in this match for very long. But although he did hit a vertebraker for the win over, I believe he pinned Blake Christian with a vertebraker, which I loved. That's one of my favorite moves in the history of pro wrestling. So I always love seeing a vertebraker. Marked out hard for that one. So huge shout out to you know, Josh Alexander for getting this win. But once again, they got to figure out some interesting stuff right now to do with Ace Austin, Trey Miguel, Willie Mack, and Chris Bay, because those four guys are super ultra talented. After that, we had a no DQ Texas Tornado match for the Knockouts Tag Team Championships, where Fire and Flava, the team of Kira Hogan and Tasha Steelz, defeated the team of Havoc and Nevaeh. This was all right. I mean, it was a pretty solid match. There was a few times during this where Havoc and Nevaeh did a few things that, like, I was just kind of like, that didn't look too good. But that all aside, I thought it was solid. I think Fire and Flava being the champions, like, that is the right move. I like the fact that this was no DQ because they were able to use, some weapons and stuff and make it interesting. They were using, you know, signs and kendo sticks and that kind of stuff. At one point, I think it was Havoc almost, I can't remember who was on the ground. I can't remember if it was Hogan or Steelz, but Havoc almost sat right on one of their heads in the match. And I just remember, because I think it was Matt Stryker on commentary, was like, "Oh wow, that was real close. Like, what would have happened if the power and strength of Havoc would have landed on Kira Hogan or Tasha Steelz, you know, whichever one. I can't remember who it was in there, but it was just funny because it was like, that was a pretty funny way of putting it. Her power is gonna. It was like, it was just funny how he put it, because in reality, when somebody just like sits on your head, like, it's not really a power and strength thing. It's like a your whole weight dropping on somebody's head. It's like, you know, Yokozuna was a powerful guy with a lot of strength, and his finisher was sitting on people. Same with Rikishi and stuff, but it was never like, they're sitting on you with their power and strength. It's like, oh no, like, they're about to crush you, you know, like, bam. So I just thought it was kind of funny how they put it on commentary when that happened. I just caught it. But that all being said, Fire and Flava getting this win, I think, was the right move. And Havoc and Nevaeh have been doing good work. You know, I know there's a lot of people, or at least I hear of a lot of people, you know, on the internet and stuff, that don't seem to be a huge fan of Havoc and Nevaeh as a team. But I think they're all right. And, you know, I think they were perfect in this role, because I don't think anyone really figured that Fire and Flava was going to lose the titles on this show. So it made sense for them to have, like, a team that, you know, looked like they were going to be more of, like, how do I say this? Fire and Flava kind of seemed like the underdogs, even as champions, because of the size difference between them and Havoc and Nevaeh, if that makes sense. So I thought this was kind of a good, almost like overcoming the odds type scenario for their first big title defense with those Knockout tag team titles. After that, we had a really good match. TJP retaining the X Division Championship over Rohit Raju. Rio Raju had Malabahi Shira in his corner, which I think is an awesome pairing. I really like Shira with Rohit Raju. I think Shira has a ton of potential to be a really big star. I mean, he absolutely looks the part. You know, TJP, I say this all the time, you know, whatever, regardless of what your opinion of him is, you know, outside of wrestling, he is very, very good in the ring and always has been. And I thought this match was really, really well done. I think Rohit Raju is fantastic. I love his character. I love his moveset and the things that he does. At one point, was it this match? I think it was this match. At one point, it had to have been this match. And I just remember, like, really being like, wow, I've never seen that before. I believe it was TJP was going for a tornado DDT, and Rahit Raju turned it into a Northern Light suplex, which I've never seen before. I thought it was awesome. Like, if whenever somebody does something I've never seen before, I'll mark out for it. There was actually, oh my gosh, who was it? I think it was Alex Ocean. I can't remember who he was wrestling on the, I think it was at Action Wrestling. I watched Alex Ocean catch a guy who was, like, the dude went for a spear, and he caught him in midair, like in a side slam. Like, caught him, like, just sidestepped him and caught him in midair, mid-spear, and then picked him up and slammed him. I was like, oh my god, I've never seen that before. So anytime that I, like, in 2021, if you can do a move that I've never seen, massive props to you. And I've never seen a counter to a tornado DDT like that before. And I think we're going to see a lot more people use that because it was a great counter that made a lot of sense. The match itself, though, I thought, once again, very, very well done. Two very talented in-ring performers. I like Shira on the outside because it presented another layer of me thinking, like, that Raju was going to win. As a matter of fact, I can't remember who I predicted last week on the show, but I know I did another set of predictions on YouTube this week, and I picked Rahit Raju to win. So I was incorrect in my predictions, but, you know, TJP versus Josh Alexander is going to be really, really, really good. Josh Alexander versus Rahit Raju would have been really, really good as well. But that is what we're getting next, is going to be Josh Alexander, after winning that match earlier in the night, is going to be taking on TJP for the X Division Championship at a future date. So I'm really looking forward to that. TJP, just for the record, got the win with a springboard DDT and followed up with his Mamba Splash for the 1-2-3. Two thumbs up. This was really great stuff. After that, we had another match that I really enjoyed, a six-woman tag team match where Jazz ODB and Jordan Grace defeated Susan, Deonna Purrazzo, and Kimberly. This was really good. I love everyone involved in this. I'm a huge fan of Jordan Grace, as everybody knows at this point. I've just never shut up about how great I think she is. Same with Deonna Purrazzo. I think Jordan Grace and Deonna Purrazzo are two of the best female wrestlers in the entire world and on any brand. We had ODB pretty much making her return to Impact, and Jazz, who's just a total legend. There was a kind of a tease here at one point where Jordan Grace accidentally hit Jazz, or vice versa. I can't remember which way that went. It was Jazz hit Jordan Grace. Jazz got poked in the eye and thought that Jordan Grace were the opponents. Susan did a great job. Obviously, Sue Young is like the more OP version of her, the more like a powerful, title threat version of her. And Kimberly did good stuff. She had a really nice Swanton bomb out to the floor to take out, you know, everyone towards the end of the match. And Jazz got the win for the team when she got Susan to tap out to the STF. So all good stuff, made Jazz look good, teased some stuff brewing up between her and Jordan Grace, which, you know, they've had a match before, but when they have their rematch, I think there's going to be a lot of actual heat there. It won't be just like a clean split. It'll be like there's going to be some dissension there, and somebody's going to turn on the other by the time they have their next big match, I think. And these were some little seeds being planted to further that, I think. So great stuff. Good match. I think the right team won, and I was correct in that prediction. After that, we had the Impact World Tag Team Championships on the line in a triple threat match. The Good Brothers defending against Private Party, along with Matt Hardy, and the team of James Storms and Chris Sabin. When I did my predictions on this show last week, Storm and Sabin had not been introduced to the match. That did not change my prediction, though. I did have the Good Brothers winning, and they did retain. The finish came when basically Mark Quinn, Private Party hits like all their moves, and Mark Quinn hits a shooting star press to seal the deal. And then I think it was Gallows. I'm pretty sure it was Gallows gets like the blind tag, and they get like everyone out of the way, and Anderson is like blocking anyone else from getting in the ring, and basically Gallows just steals Private Party's hard work and gets the pin on James Storm for the 1-2-3. Side note, James Storm still Love that guy. I think that he's one of the greatest wrestling talents to never get a real run in the WWE. He had a couple matches on NXT, but he, of everybody that, especially of active, current active performers, he is like at the top of my list of guys that, you know, do I really want to see him in WWE? I do, because he never really did it, you know, and I think he deserves the eyes on him. You know, he deserves more people seeing him. Now, what I think will probably wind up happening is he'll do some stuff with AEW, which I think would be awesome. But, you know, he did great stuff with NWA. He's been doing great stuff with TNA forever. I mean, I've seen him on the indies. I've seen, you know, here's a quick James Storm story. When I was turning, man, I don't remember how old I was. It was probably like 4 or 5 years ago. I was at a show at the Nashville Fairgrounds called Freedom Pro Wrestling, and James Storm was in the main event. And it was my birthday, and I was in the front row, and he didn't know it was my birthday. It just happened to be my birthday, and it was me and one of my friends went to the show, and at the end of the show, James Storm came out with a cooler full of beer, and he was in the ring just, like, celebrating, kind of Stone Cold Steve Austin style, and he looked out into the crowd, and I, like, put my hand up, kind of like the surf's up sign, you know, like the tip me back one type signal with my fingers. And I threw that up at him, and he just like happened to look right at the right time. And he reached into the cooler and just tossed me a beer into the front row. And like, I caught it, like, perfect moment, like perfect catch. I cracked it open and just started downing it, you know, and it was like just the perfect moment. And I was already a humongous James Storm fan, but that made me even more of a fan of his. There was also a time later on that I ran into him again. And I shouldn't say ran into him. Like, these were at wrestling shows that, you know, it makes sense that he was there. But there was another, a completely separate time where I walked up to him and just started talking to him and told him I was a big fan. And we were standing like near the bar, and like I bought him a Coors Light or something because I was drinking a beer, and I was like, James Storm, like, be an honor to share a beer with you, man. And he was like, yeah, cool, man. And so I give him a beer, and you know, all those guys, you know, they charge for autographs and pictures and stuff, you know, before the shows and during intermission, and they should, like, I think it's totally fine that they charge at shows. That's the way that they're really making extra money, and I have no problem with it at all. You know, sometimes I think the prices are a little ridiculous for some people, but James Storm isn't one of those people. And like, I buy him this beer, and I'm standing next to him. We're just like talking. I'm just like telling him I'm a big fan. And he was like, hey man, we want a picture or something. And I was like, hell yeah, dude. Like, you know, cause the beer was like $3, you know, and which is, you know, much less than what like pictures and autographs and all that stuff would have cost. And anyway, yeah, he like, I got a picture with him and stuff, and he was cool as hell. And like, every time I see him, like, I highly doubt he remembers who I am or anything, but every time I see him, like, it's kind of like this thing where I think he like kind of recognizes me a little bit, kind of thing. And it's always in Nashville when I see him. So I don't know. I've just always really been a big fan of his, and the point of me saying all this is I'm just a random fan to him, and he's always been super, super cool to me. And I can only imagine he's like that with every single person that he meets. So, you know, huge shout out to James Storm. He's a guy that, man, I just want to see him doing even more, because I think right now he's in the prime of his career. I know he might be kind of more on the tail end because he has, you know, a lot of miles, but I feel like he could still offer so much to the world of wrestling in any company. And, yeah, I think, Chris Sabin, I could say a lot of the same stuff about, you know, I think Chris Sabin's incredible. Private Party looked great in this match. And like I said, they pretty much, it looked like they deserved to win the match. But the Good Brothers steal the win, which was also well done because they're the heels. It makes sense for them to hold on to those titles, especially because you have that story still brewing between them and the Young Bucks. And inevitably, we'll get the Good Brothers versus the Young Bucks title versus title at some point, I would imagine. And in the main event of this show, we had Rich Swann defending the Impact World Heavyweight Championship against Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer turned 50 years old on last night, the day of this match, 50 years old. And I know there's a lot of people that were like really down on Dreamer getting this title shot. I'm one of them to a degree, right? You know, if you listen to the show often, you know I'm over Tommy Dreamer and I don't really need to see him on the show anymore. I respect the hell out of him, similar to Rhino, right? Like, I respect the hell out of him. I've been watching since ECW. I really respect what he does for the next generation, and there's been plenty of people that I know behind the scenes, whether they're wrestlers or production people or whatever, and all, you know, they all say nothing but great things about Tommy Dreamer. A lot of them wouldn't have had an opportunity to get booked in a lot of these companies if it wasn't for Tommy Dreamer vouching for them or discovering them. So I have nothing but all the respect in the world for Tommy Dreamer. It's just odd seeing him at this age in kind of the physical shape that he's in being pushed as a serious contender for the Impact World title when there is a who's who list of like incredible potential and up and coming talents in Impact Wrestling. Like, you know, I get the story, and Tommy Dreamer did a great job selling this last week with his promos and stuff leading up to this match. So I got to give him a lot of credit. They did the best they could with this scenario. The problem, though, to me, is there was never one inkling of possibility that I thought in a million years Tommy Dreamer was winning this match and winning this championship. So, you know, it just, I couldn't suspend my disbelief, and that's what really kind of took me out of it. I thought the match was good. Like, I thought it was really well done, but I don't think anybody thought Dreamer stood a chance of winning this title belt. And you have this other, this whole roster, like I've been saying, of people like, I mean, if they did Rich Swann versus Chris Bay again, I think that would have done a lot for both of those guys, especially Chris Bay. They could have done Rich Swann versus Ace Austin. They could have done Rich Swann versus Willie Mack, you know, as a way of basically saying sorry for, you know, kind of putting you through what Moose is doing to you, because he's doing all this, he did all this stuff to you, just beating the hell out of you because he's trying to get to me. You know what? You technically won the I Quit match, and you're my friend. You know what? I want you to have a title shot against me. Like, that would have, you know, there's just a lot better options, I think, than 50-year-old Tommy Dreamer getting a title shot. But once again, I don't mean disrespect by that. I think people listening, I think y'all understand where I'm coming from. But it's just, you know, as far as the match, though, like, it was what it was, and it was better than I thought it was going to be. So it was a good match. It was a good story. I just feel like there's just so many other people that don't really have much going on right now in Impact that could have been in that spot, and it would have really helped them out. But the finish came when Rich Swann hit a bunch of these like kicks on Dreamer. Like, Dreamer was, you know, on his knees, and Swann was just kicking the hell out of him and doing a bunch of stuff. Eventually hit a Phoenix Splash from the second rope for the 1-2-3. Which, you know, good stuff. And but after the match was actually more important. So Tommy Dreamer, you know, hugs Rich Swann, and then Moose comes out and lays them both out, and then just continues to beat down Rich, attacking Rich's knee. And, you know, Rich has had those leg problems ever since Eric Young, you know, injured him back at, I think it was back at Slammiversary, which is already way longer ago than I thought it was. Like, this past year has just been so weird in so many ways. But yeah, I mean, this is all great because Moose is making it clear, like, he has next. It's Moose versus Rich Swann, next big title fight for Impact Wrestling. I'm all for it. It's been really, really well built. They're going to continue to build it, and I think they're going to keep knocking it out of the park. And I've been saying it for a minute. I think that Moose is the one to beat Rich Swann for that title. I really do. But if Rich Swann won, it's going to make Rich Swann look even better than he does now. And I would have no problem with either guy being the Impact World Champion right now. I think Moose and Rich Swann are both very good choices for Impact World Heavyweight Champion. And then after the show ended, in a complete random out of nowhere surprise, we get this little video package for New Japan Pro Wrestling. And all of a sudden we find out that Dave Finley and Juice Robinson are going to be coming over from New Japan, and they're going to be at Impact. I think they're going to be at Impact this Tuesday, actually. So very interesting stuff. I've talked a lot about the possibilities and my thoughts on this forbidden door being kicked open, and, you know, all the potential between Impact and AEW and New Japan and Ring of Honor and NWA and MLW and all these different scenarios I could possibly have. And this just adds to it. I mean, Finn Juice coming over, I think it's great because there are also guys in New Japan that are like not the top of the top, but similar to Private Party, kind of, where like I think that Finn Juice is going to do a lot for their careers and it's going to help them out a lot to come to Impact Wrestling, especially if they're treated like a big deal in their in the title mix. If they look really good in Impact, I think it's just going to continue to raise their stock. And I think they're going to succeed. I think both guys are very talented, and I've been looking for them to do something different, kind of like something that really grabbed my attention. You know, I don't know how to explain it. There's always been just something or other missing to me about Juice Robinson. You know, I know he has a huge fan base and like I like him, but there's always been just a little something missing for him. And then Dave Finley, I think, is really solid, but he's same thing. Like there's always something or other just a little bit missing from him. And I think the two of them coming to Impact Wrestling could solve that problem for me. So really interested in what's going on with all that. And if you want deeper thoughts on how I feel about this whole Forbidden Door thing between all these companies, check out previous episodes of The Weekender because I've talked about it quite a bit. All right, so let's talk some more results. This will be a little bit quicker as far as the results go. I won't deep dive quite as much here, but let's start off with MLW Fusion. We had ACH defeating Brian Pillman Jr. in the opener, got the win with the Brainbuster. Solid stuff. ACH continues to be one of the best in-ring wrestlers in the world, and Brian Pillman Jr. continues to improve and keeps getting better. And that's all you really, I think, really want to see right now out of Brian Pillman Jr. is him just getting better and better. You know, he has a ton of potential. He has a big name to live up to, being the son of Brian Pillman. He has high expectations, especially, you know, really early on in his career, being spotlighted the way that he is in AEW. You know, he's not like a main player in AEW by any means, but yeah, I think the plan is for him to be one day. And I think his career progression has been done really well. So I like this match a lot, and ACH getting the win, I think, made all the sense in the world. We had Team Filthy attack ACH after the match. Always good to see Greeny Koo and Filthy Tom Lawler. ACH, or sorry, not ACH, Team Filthy also, you know, they did some vignettes during the show because next week is Filthy Island. I thought that was this week. I got my weeks mixed up, but next week is Filthy Island, and I'm really looking forward to that show. That has potential to be the most fun MLW show since the restart. And they've had some really good shows since the restart, this being one of them. We had up next Calvin Tankman defeating Zenshi. This match was, I'll say this. I think Calvin Tankman looked awesome. I think Zenshi tries to do way too much in the ring. It's hard to explain. If you watch Zenshi wrestle, I think you might see what I mean. He's constantly going for like, it's like he's trying to put a hat on a hat on everything. It's like it'll be a move that's like already impressive, but then he tries to add like his twist to that move. You know, a little extra movement or step or a little extra added move on top of the move, and it just never looks right. It looks clunky and botchy. I think Zenshi needs to work on just doing less. For him, I think less is more. I'm not gonna sit here and like roast the dude or anything. He's had good matches. This just, you know, and I can't blame this on Tankman because I've seen Tankman enough to know when it's on him and when it's on the opponent, and I feel like it's on Zenshi. But everything Tankman did, I think, was really well done, and his Tankman driver for the win looked brutal, which it always does. I'm very high on Calvin Tankman. He checks every box you're looking for in of a star in pro wrestling. He has a unique look. He has the size. He can do a moonsault off the top rope. I mean, like he can do everything, and he's a guy who I talk about how important it is, you know, to have kind of that level of charisma where you're drawn to the screen. You don't want to turn the channel or watch something different when you see certain people. And to me, Calvin Tankman has that. You see that dude and the way he carries himself, the way he looks, the way he wrestles, everything about him, and you're like, I'm drawn to the guy. You know, I'm very impressed by him. I have been for a long time. I saw him really early on in his career. I believe it was really early on in his career at Southern Underground Pro. He couldn't have been, he had to have been pretty damn new when I saw him, because he has gotten significantly better since then. And that's not a knock, by the way. Sometimes when you're newer in your career, I mean, that's, you're just in there trying to get reps and just trying to improve. So no knock on Tankman, but it's actually more of a compliment, because in a relatively short amount of time, Tankman went from a guy that I thought was like just another big man to a guy that I think is really, really special, and he's going to be a really big name in the world of pro wrestling. I really, of all the people MLW has under contract right now, Calvin Tankman, I think, has the most superstar potential, probably. Like, Jacob Fatu is kind of already there. You know, I think you could put Fatu on any show in the world for any company, and he'd make a big impact. Tankman is more, from the sense of, like, someone who I think is a relative unknown to the mainstream wrestling audience, and is going to become a very big name. After that, we had Injustice defeating Contra Unit via countout. Nothing really to really talk about here. Basically, a brawl happens before the match, and it just nothing really more to talk about there. In the main event of the show, we had Lio Rush defeat Laredo Kid. This was an interpromotional AAA Cruiserweight title versus MLW World Middleweight title match. So title versus title. Lio Rush gets the win after hitting a rebound stunner and then nailing the final hour for the 1-2-3. Really great stuff. Both guys are super talented. Laredo Kid's been having great matches, especially the match he had with Kenny Omega at Triple Mania was really, really damn good. Lio Rush, I can't say enough good things about him. I think that WWE dropped the ball humongously on whatever went on between the two parties, the two sides. Lio Rush is one of the best in-ring wrestlers in the entire world. He can talk in the mic. He carries himself a certain way on screen and stuff that just similar to a guy like Tankman. He draws you in, you know, and his wrestling is so next level that, yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, selfishly speaking, though, I love where he's at because I love watching MLW and I love seeing him as a part of it. And I talked about this a lot last week, and I know I talked about him a bit today already, but go out of your way to watch anything that Lio Rush did with Blake Christian the last few months. They had some great matches in GCW that I think everyone really needs to check out if they haven't already. But once again, Lio Rush getting that win over Laredo Kid and becoming the new AAA Cruiserweight Champion to add to his already title reign of MLW World Middleweight Champion. Great stuff. Up next, we have 205 Live results. Only two matches here, like normal. But like I always say, 205 Live, you're not missing out on anything that has consequences. You know, nothing to the grander scheme of things within the WWE universe. But there's always some solid matches and some great talent. In the opener, we had Mansoor and Ashanti the Adonis defeating Bali Rise. The finish came when Ashanti hits the long kiss goodnight on Samir Singh for the 1-2-3. And I'm fine with this. Like, Mansoor is like undefeated on 205 Live, and Ashanti the Adonis was, I can't even remember what his name was before. Like, he had a different name in 205 Live for a little while there, and I'm blanking on what it used to be. But since renaming himself Ashanti the Adonis, I think he's done really, really damn good work. And Bali Rise, I'm fine with them getting losses. I mean, this is it's kind of a makeshift team of, you know, Chase Parker and Samir Singh, one half of Ever-Rise, one half of the Bollywood Boys. I have no problem with Mansoor and Adonis getting the win here. And Mansoor and Adonis, I mean, they've been doing damn good work on 205 Live consistently for quite a while now. And the only other match we have here, Jake Atlas defeated Tony Nese. The finish came when Tony Nese was, he went to get his chain. He was going to hit Jake Atlas with his big chain. And August Gray came out for the save. And when Tony Nese was like distracted by August Gray making the save, Jake got a roll up for the 1-2-3 to get the pin and the win in the main event. So more good stuff. You know, it's continuing to build August Gray as like one of the centerpieces of 205 Live. Because I think the direction they're heading is August Gray versus Santos Escobar next for the title, is how I feel. You know, Curt Stallion had the last opportunity. Stallion and Gray are aligned and they're buddies. Stallion couldn't get the job done. Maybe Gray gets the next shot. I love Curt Stallion. I'm really interested to see what they do with him going forward, because I think they did a pretty damn good job of building him as a challenger to Escobar. But now, you know, what's next? I really want to see more of Curt Stallion on NXT, though. I think he did great stuff with 205 Live, and I think he'll continue to if he's still there. But I think Curt Stallion would be better served as a regular part of NXT on Wednesday nights on USA Network. And then, of course, the other half of the main event on the losing end, you had Tony Nese, who, you know, this is his position on the show at this point. I've talked about this a lot over and over. Every now and then he gets a decent win, but for the most part, he's like the gatekeeper of 205 Live right now. Jake Atlas getting that win establishes Jake Atlas as a guy who is on the level of a potential, you know, title challenger. But if Nese would have beat Jake Atlas, that would have only hurt Jake Atlas. I just don't think Tony Nese is going to get back to that point anytime, at least in the near future, of being like the cruiserweight champion. He's been the champion before, but I don't think that's happening in his future. And I think he's just better served to help put over the newer generation of guys like Jake Atlas as far as on 205 Live. That's not to say, though, that I wouldn't want to see Nese, you know, pop up more on NXT on Wednesdays, or even like NXT UK or Raw or SmackDown or something. I mean, the guy's talented enough to wrestle anywhere. He's just kind of in a, I don't know how to, he's kind of just in like this gatekeeper position on 205 Live. But once again, solid show with, you know, two solid matches on NXT, or sorry, on a 205 Live this week. Moving on to NXT UK, opening match, we had Satomura defeating Isla Dawn. The finish came when Satomura hit a, I can't remember what the name was. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name of this move. It was the sad thing is I almost wrote it down and I was like, there's no way I'm gonna forget it. What she does is, Dawn is, this is really hard to explain, but Dawn is like on one knee, like sitting up on one knee, and Satomura like jumps up. She like stands on Dawn's leg. That's like, cause it's like, at like a 90 degree angle. So she like steps up on her leg and then hits this like axe kick to the back of the head. But it wasn't like an axe kick how Booker T does it. It was like an axe kick where like the foot landed to the back of the head, not the back of the leg. So once again, I'm probably doing a really difficult job explaining this. It's a move I don't know if I've ever really seen before, other than her use it. So I just wish I could remember the name of it. I'm just blanking on the name. But it looked brutal. The only unfortunate thing about this move is it takes a very specific setup, unless she can get her leg high enough to kick you in the back of the head without you being kneeled. So that all said, though, I mean, it looked brutal. Some big news coming out of this show. It looks like next week we're going to have Joe Coffey taking on Rampage Brown. They've been building that for a while, and they've been building the hell out of Rampage Brown since his debut in NXT UK. Joe Coffey has been a mainstay in like the upper mid-card to main event scene. He's had multiple title matches. He basically beats everybody outside of the champion consistently. I'll just say that. So definitely wanted to note that. I am looking forward to Joe Coffey versus Rampage Brown. And my prediction is that Rampage Brown wins that one. I think that's what's going to happen next week. We get another interesting video package where Trent Seven talks about how he's trying to lose weight to get down to the cruiserweight division. So it looks like they may be moving Trent Seven to 205 Live, or maybe eventually, maybe it's, you know, Trent Seven trying to get a match with Jordan Devlin, because because, you know, Jordan Devlin never lost the cruiserweight title, and now Santos Escobar holds that title over in the U.S., where, you know, Devlin's over here in the U.K. So maybe it's going to lead to, you know, Trent Seven versus Jordan Devlin. But regardless, if Trent Seven can get to 205, like, I'm totally fine with him coming to 205 Live. Like, if they can get him over to the U.S. on a regular basis, I think, because Trent Seven's just kind of it's similar to Tony Nese, kind of, in 205 Live. Trent Seven's kind of in the spot with NXT UK where, like, he's not going to be the champion. There's, you know, the Mustache Mountain thing isn't really a thing. Pete Dunne's off doing his own thing in NXT on Wednesdays. Tyler Bate, I think, is going to be heavily pushed as a singles guy, and I think he'll probably be leaving the brand sometime soon, too. I mean, that's just a guess. I don't know that. And then they have these new guys like Ben Carter and Rampage Brown and stuff that, like, they're building and building. And you know, I think that Trent Seven has kind of done everything he's going to do in NXT UK. So I would like to see him in 205 Live. I think it at least gives him something different to do. After that, Piper Nevin defeats a male, gets the win with the Piper driver, which is a, you know, Michinoku driver for the 1-2-3. Not a whole lot to talk about there. It makes sense that Nevin got the win, and I like Nevin. I think they're going to continue to push her, and no problems at all right there with her getting that victory with the Piper driver for the 1-2-3. We get a graphic about Ben Carter wrestling next week, and A Kid's going to defend the Heritage Cup against Shea Samuels. And of course, they again plug Rampage Brown versus Joe Coffey. This is all right before the main event, where South Wales Subculture defeated The Hunt in a street fight. This was a fun match. You know, there was a great table spot in the corner towards the end of the match. You know, finish came when South Wales Subculture hit double dives onto, you know, both members of The Hunt, onto Primate and Eddie for the 1-2-3. So South Wales Subculture gets the win here. I like that a lot. They're probably my favorite tag team in all of NXT UK. I really enjoy the two of them as a team. I like them both singles as well, but as a tag team, they complement each other really well. I loved their win and their run with the NXT UK tag team titles before. You know, if that's what's happening soon, if they get another shot at those titles, I'd like to see them win the belts. But if they don't, that's another team I'd like to see maybe over in the US soon, because I think if they can get them onto NXT, I think they present a, you know, a new, fresh team for NXT on Wednesdays, or even for Raw or SmackDown. Like, they're different enough that I think they could work anywhere. So, I like this, though. I like South Wales Subculture getting the win. I thought this was a really good match. I thought this was a really good show, but if for no other reason, I would say check the show out for the main event and check out this tag team street fight. And once again, yeah, South Wales Subculture getting the win. Like it a lot. We got GCW Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 4 results. Going to read these out to you real quick. We had Diego Perez defeating Gil Guadardo by submission via front face lock. He was in the full mount when he hit that. We had Calder McCole defeating Royce Isaacs by submission. Got the one with a triangle choke. We had Super Beast defeating Bad Dude Tito by submission. Got the one with a double wrist lock, also known as a Kimura. We had JR Kratos defeating Alex Coughlin by TKO, got the win with knee strikes. We had Grizzly Kaljak defeating Nolan Edward. And this, I'm just gonna say this, and because I could talk for a whole podcast about this too. It's Nolan Edward, no S at the end. I know it's like everyone messes it up, and it was something where I was watching this show and listening to Josh Barnett not really know who he was. Like, when you listen to the commentary, it's like, it's your show, you're on commentary, and you're talking about, like, how you don't know who this guy is, you don't really know about his history or anything, and you're mispronouncing his name over and over. I think it was even spelled as Nolan Edwards in his graphic for his entrance and everything. So it was like, come on, y'all. Like, I mean, at least go that extra step to doing a little bit of research about the people you're talking about. So, you know, I didn't like that side of it, but, you know, the match itself was a lot of fun, and the finish came where Jack got the win over Edward by throwing him into a brick wall. He knocked him out by throwing him into a brick wall, and that's just the most Nolan Edward thing in the world, because I bet you that was his idea. I'll just put it that way. After that, we had Filthy Tom Lawler defeating Simon Grimm by TKO, beat him with a knee to the liver, something that would make Boss Rutan very, very happy to see. And I like this matchup a lot, because both guys have, like, the grappling and MMA backgrounds and stuff, and Lawler getting the win there I thought was great. Lawler should never really be losing in these kind of matches, in this type of setting, unless it's to another guy with, like, a serious MMA background, in my opinion. We had Davey Boy Smith Jr. defeating Calvin Tankman, which was awesome. Got the win by submission with a crossface. And then we had, in the main event, Jeff Cobb defeating Chris Dickinson by KO. Knocked him out with a suplex. Love both those guys. Dickinson, I feel like, is still just a matter of time before we see him on mainstream TV. And Jeff Cobb's all over the place. This setting suits both guys very well. And the biggest news to come out of this show is it was announced that on the next event, we're going to have Davey Boy Smith Jr. taking on Jon Moxley. And this will be Moxley's return to Bloodsport. He was there over the collective weekend, and I cannot wait for that. I think it's cool as hell that Moxley does this kind of stuff because he's got all the money in the world. He's one of the biggest names in wrestling. He's on mainstream TV every week. And because he loves wrestling and fighting and all this so much on like a personal level, he just loves it so much that he still pops up for, you know, this kind of stuff like Bloodsport, where there's way less people watching, way more niche of an audience or niche of an audience, however you say it. And he does it out of love. He isn't doing it for extra fame or clout or anything. He's doing it because he loves fighting. He loves wrestling. And these are the kind of things he couldn't do while he was, you know, stuck in the WWE for all those years. So I thought that was awesome that they've announced that Davey Boy Smith Jr. is going to be taking on Jon Moxley the next Bloodsport. That's going to be badass. All right, up next we got some ROH results from their latest episode. Started off with a pure rules match where Tracy Williams took on the world famous CB. That is, Cheeseburger is now the world famous CB. He had a whole video package and stuff explaining the change in character and attitude and appearance and all that stuff. This was pretty good. Went like probably around 15 minutes or so. Tracy Williams eventually got the win with a pile driver. Solid stuff. You know, I've never been the biggest Cheeseburger fan, but it's good to see him change it up a little bit because I'll be more interested in what he's doing now than what he's been doing up until this point. You know, Cheeseburger is another guy I've met in person. He was super cool. I respect the hell out of the fact that he was able to accomplish everything he has in wrestling, but I always felt like he was only going to go so far doing the stuff he's been doing. Now that he's doing something different, I think that's going to help him out quite a bit. And after the match, they both adhere to the code of honor. Tracy Williams and CB shake hands after the match. And yeah, that was really good stuff. I love Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, one of my favorite wrestlers in the world, one of the best technicians in the entire world. So, you know, fan of all this. And the main event was a no contest. We had Brody King, PCO, and the Briscoes taking on Dragon Lee, La Vista del Ring, and Roosh, and Flip Gordon. And this basically everything happens. Like a whole bunch of people run out. There's just a giant brawl at the end of the show to cause a no contest. And kind of the big theme of the show right now too is, you know, one of the big stories is the bouncers, because Brian Milanes and Beer City Bruiser, it looks like, you know, dissension between them, and, you know, will they or won't they join along with Vincent and all that stuff. And so some interesting stories going on right now in Ring of Honor. You know, there's not a whole lot I can talk about match wise this week, because once again, you know, a big no contest in the main event. But if you want to see a solid pure wrestling match, check it out for Tracy Williams versus the world famous CB. Next, we got a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Set for Life. Show started off with Matt and Nick Jackson talking to the Good Brothers. They're in front of a green screen again. Honestly, like, I'm already really over these segments between these two teams in front of the green screen and all the dick and sex jokes and stuff. It's just, I don't know, it's already kind of too much. It's stuff that I think is really funny during shows like Talking Shop and Mania, and every now and then it's really funny, but I don't know, it's been a little much. And they talk about like people complaining about the things they've been saying and the whole, you know, the whole Buck thing from last week when they had a deer on the screen and all this stuff. So I'll let y'all watch it and make your own opinions. I've had enough of kind of all of the stuff they've been doing. I want to see the match between the two teams, and I think it's been more well done on AEW Dynamite, but on Being the Elite, the whole thing's just been kind of annoying, in my opinion. After that, we had, the Young Bucks. We see Nick Jackson taking, he's getting pictures taken of himself for the upcoming AEW video games. We get clips of the Battle Royal from last week. So it's Valentine's Day today, right, as the day of this recording. So on this most recent episode of Being the Elite, there's a lot of Valentine's Day stuff, and the Dark Order is making Valentine's, and they're reading all the Valentine's out, and they roast five for his, of course. He has one for Hangman Page, Everyone else's are for Wardlow, which I'll talk about here in a little bit more in just a second. We have Matt Hardy. We see him leaving a voicemail for Hangman Page. He really wants to keep tag teaming with him. And then we see Hardy and Private Party talking to each other, and Private Party's talking about how he can't trust Hangman Page. And then they bring up how Hangman still owes them $12, which was something that I never want them to go back to ever again, because the Private Party $12 or 12 bucks, whatever they call it, that $12 segment thing that they did for like a few months on Being the Elite, it was like this this whole bit that they did week after week after week, and it just wasn't good. It just didn't land, and I really hope they don't go back to anything like that. And then they just kind of hype up the upcoming match between basically their title match on Impact that we've already talked about. Then we get some more stuff between the Good Brothers and Matt and Nick Jackson. We get them talking about the Forbidden Door being open and all that stuff. And the Young Bucks are getting kind of annoyed with it too at this point too. Like, they're wondering how many times they can keep like letting, because Gallows and Anderson basically cost them the match in the Royal or in their Battle Royal and stuff, and they're just trying to. There's definitely some dissension there. They're not on the same page. The Young Bucks and the Good Brothers are not on the same page, and we're just kind of seeing that all play out. We get more Dark Order stuff where they're all one by one walking up to Wardlow and giving him Valentine's, which I thought was really funny. Like, the whole Dark Order just loves Wardlow and wants him to be their Valentine. Anna Jay winds up giving Stu Grayson a Valentine that just says F off, which was pretty funny. And Five wants to give Hangman a card, but he goes to Hangman Page's locker room. Hangman isn't there, so he leaves the card, you know, on the chair that Hangman had his gear on. After that, we have Chris Statlander talking to Brandon Cutler, and she thinks that, she wrote a song for Orange Cassidy. She's singing it and performing it for Orange Cassidy, and then we realize Orange Cassidy has just been sleeping through the whole thing. We get a BTE Championship number one contender match. It's a trivia contest, and Fuego del Sol 10 and Brandon Cutler wind up winning, so there's going to be a handstand competition next week for the title. And the show wraps up with Matt Hardy finding the Valentine's Day card on Hangman in Hangman Page's locker room. He reads it and then rips it up, so Hangman isn't going to know what Five was trying to say on behalf of him and probably on behalf of the Dark Order. So we'll see where that all heads, but it's really interesting with all the stuff Matt Hardy's doing right now. He's a part of a lot of different storylines, and the storylines are really interesting. And I hope we get Hangman versus Matt Hardy at the next big AEW show, because I think it'll deliver. All right, really quick before we get out of here, going to give you some NXT TakeOver Vengeance Day predictions, because that show is tonight as of the day of this recording. So we're just going to run through these real quick, give you my predictions. I'm going to say Johnny Gargano retains the NXT North American Championship over Kushida, although personally speaking, like, I'd like to see Kushida get that title. I think Io Shirai retains the NXT Women's Championship over Toni Storm and Mercedes Martinez. I think Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai win the Dusty Rhodes Classic. I'm going to say Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez defeat Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. On the men's side of the Dusty Rhodes Classic, I'm going to say that MSK, the team of Nash Carter and Wes Lee, defeat the Grizzled Young Veterans. So I have MSK as the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic winners, and that's a huge way of starting off their NXT careers. And in the main event, which I assume is going to be the main event, I have Finn Balor retaining the NXT Championship over Pete Dunne in what I expect to be a really, really damn good matchup. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at FightTalk_FIGHTTALK_. Till next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.